And welcome to our conversation about behavioral and mental health. My name is Jen Toman, and I work for Catholic Charities of Baltimore. I am here today with Dr. Liwei Hua. She is a child and adolescent psychiatrist and the director of psychiatry education at Villa Maria Community Resources Behavioral Health Clinic in Anne Arundel County. Dr. Hua, would you mind sharing a brief background on yourself?
Hi, I'm Liwei Hua. I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist. I did my undergraduate training at University of Delaware, and then I went to graduate school at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx, New York. While I was in graduate school, I realized that research and grant writing were not for me, so I applied to medical school and went to the State University of New York Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn. And after that, I did my residency at University of Maryland, Sheppard Pratt, for 3 years before going to Massachusetts General Hospital and McLean Hospital for training in, well, for my fellowship in child and adolescent psychiatry. And then after that, I moved to Michigan and was at Michigan for 5 years as clinical assistant professor and the director of the outpatient child and adolescent psychiatry services there. And then my husband got a job at University of Maryland. So I had, when I left Maryland after my residency, I never thought I'd come back, but here I am. We've been here for about 5 years. And so I've been at Villa Maria and it's been great.
Welcome back to Maryland.
Thank you.
If you were born in the 70s or earlier, you probably remember that ubiquitous 80s catchphrase, just say no. For some young people at the time, it was enough, but for a lot, it didn't go nearly far enough to help them understand the dangers of drug addiction. And as the last 40 years have worn on, America's war on drugs has led to casualties beyond deaths from addictions. Our drug laws have led to high rates of incarceration, especially in communities of color because of inequitable sentencing guidelines. Criminal records led to chronic unemployment. Prescription opioids have topped street drugs for addiction rates in some categories. We have a significantly addicted society, and drugs themselves have changed. What's popular, what's easy to find, what's in the drugs you think you know? Fentanyl, added to heroin, is responsible for an extraordinary number of overdose deaths. Plus, marijuana is either legal or decriminalized in many states, and cocaine, the party drug of the 80s, seems forgotten. With all those changes, how do you talk to your kids about drugs in 2020? That's what we're discussing today. Parents in schools in the 80s had the best of intentions when the Just Say No and DARE programs and others were created. Why didn't it work, in your opinion?
I think maybe the reason it didn't work, or from the research that I've done, is that it was more like people talking at kids, like giving them lectures and saying, just say no, don't do this, don't do that, rather than sort of being with them and getting in groups with them and having them role play. Like, what if somebody came and said this to you, you know, said, hey, let's try this. Wouldn't this be cool? Don't you want to be cool like us? And was able to give them some like tips or pointers on like how to respond when they're put into that sort of situation. And then I think the other thing is that maybe even though people were coming into the schools, I guess, and talking to kids, I don't really remember this. So I don't know if I was too young or what, but they would come into the schools and talk every so often, but it wasn't sort of several times over a school year instead of like over time as kids were like developing and their like interests were changing and their, you know, stages of development were changing, you know, their need to fit in or whatever. So I think those were the kind of the big reasons why those programs didn't work as well as people thought they would.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely remember having the DARE program once, maybe in middle school. And honestly, I mean, clearly it didn't stick because I don't remember what was said at all. But yeah, it was one time and that was
it. Yeah, I mean, I really don't, I guess I remember like assemblies, but I don't remember what was said. And you're right. I mean, just the catchphrase, just say no. I mean, it sounds like, oh, wow, this is okay, just say no. But if they don't give you like the tools to like actually use that, then it just won't work.
As we've mentioned in the introduction, a lot has changed since the 80s. What are the most important things for parents to be aware of now?
I would think that the most important thing to be aware of now is that kids are starting to experiment with drugs much earlier than they think, much more than anybody thinks. I mean, I myself sometimes am even guilty of this, like when somebody asks me, about, well, when I'm interviewing a kid for, you know, like about substance use, sometimes younger than a certain age, I might kind of like gloss over those questions, but really, you know, I definitely shouldn't be. And if they're 9 or 10 and they're like laughing at me, going like, "What? I never tried that," then that's like, you know, that's a great time to say to the kids, "Wow, that's so great that you haven't tried that." And then the other thing is, like, I will often, when I say, when I ask them about, you know, substance use and all that, I'll say, "Well, have any of your friends ever tried to pressure you? Have any of your friends, do any of your friends use? You know, have they ever experimented with anything?" So that, because it's also good to know, like, what the kids around them are doing, and sort of their choice in friends and stuff. So I mean, I think that's the most important thing. And then that there are other things that you wouldn't even imagine that people would want to do to experiment or try to get high, like, you know, over the counter stuff, like, you know, whatever, cough syrup and how they mix it with Sprite, whatever. These are things that I feel like I like learn from my patients sometimes, and that's not, we should be staying ahead of that curve so that we could be asking appropriate questions. I guess the most important thing is that parents should be aware that it's happening even earlier than they think.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you just said, things that you wouldn't even think of. I remember when I was in middle school or high school, maybe high school, that spice was a thing. And
Yeah.
I remember, I still don't even really know what it
Yeah.
is, but I just remember it was like this new thing that people were
Right.
doing, and you
Yeah.
heard about it everywhere. And I feel like as quickly as it rose, it kind of, at least I don't hear about it anymore.
Right.
So.
Well, I still do hear about it. It's like these drugs, but it's also like these synthetic things, and some of those are even scarier, and some of those are not, like when you do like a urine toxicology or something, like those might not even show up. So you have to be careful. And I don't know if this is different from the 80s, but parents should kind of be really watching their kids and like their performance. Like if, you know, they were straight A or, you know, A and B students before, and then suddenly, kind of without any like known stressor, like all of a sudden grades start dropping, or like there's more isolation, or they start looking different, or whatever, that parents need to be like sort of like on the lookout for any changes, and to see if it's substance use or if it's like depression or anxiety. You know what I mean?
Parents often try to figure out when their child is ready for certain conversations and find that they're learning about things already in school or from their friends. How does a parent know the right age to talk to their kids about drugs?
You know, I was kind of looking into this. Basically, it seems like it's never too early to sort of like maybe not be talking about like heroin or cocaine, but like, you know, when your kid is 1 or 2 years old, and you're saying, here's your gummy vitamin or something like that, and you are only taking this because mommy's giving it to you because I know what I'm doing and I'm keeping you safe, and you can never take too many of these, or you know what I mean? Like, oh, this is a medication that mommy's only giving you or daddy's only giving you because you have a fever and I'm trying to make the fever go down so you won't be sick. You can only take this when mommy's here. Mommy's the only one, or daddy's the only one who can give this to you, or something like that. You know what I mean? When they're young, like point out, you know, like stuff in the cabinets. Like obviously you keep a lock on him, whatever, like, you know, a kid, one of those things where kids can't get in. Make sure, like, you kind of say, okay, this is bad. Like, this is a poison. You don't want to do this. You don't want to do this. And then to also just set a good example, right? So don't smoke, don't drink. Or if you're going to do it in moderation. Or if you're going to smoke, smoke outside where the kids can't see. So those kinds of things. So you can start even like that young, basically, and starting the conversation and making sure that they know if they have any questions, they can ask you, and that you're like open to answering questions about anything. And then so even, you know, as they get older, I mean, the more you're talking with them, that, I mean, everything that I've read says that, and it makes sense to me, that basically the relationship that a parent has with a child, or a guardian has with a child, how strong that is one of the most effective factors in keeping kids from like getting into problems with substances and things later. Kind of honing that relationship or building that relationship from early on, and where kids feel like, oh, mommy, what's that? Or what's that guy doing? Why is he smoking? You said smoking was bad for us. Why is he doing that? And talking about choices and things like that, so that kids feel comfortable.
So just keeping an open communication, which, I mean, not just for drugs, for anything
Right,
is
exactly.
great.
Yeah. To answer your question, I don't think that there's like a, oh, 10 years old is the right age, you know what I mean? Or 13 because they're teenagers. I mean, like I said, it's happening earlier than many people know. So to start early and just talking about what things are good for your body and what things aren't good for your body and what things you could take when you need it. And you know what I mean? Like I think that can start super early.
Yeah, and especially it could probably make the conversation less awkward as your children get older. You know, if you're starting really young with
Yeah.
basics, you know, things, then as they get older, it won't be as uncomfortable.
Right.
What would you say to a parent who feels that their own substance use, whether it be now or in recent past, or what we tend to call recreational use decades ago, makes them unable to tell their children not to try drugs?
I would say that that's not accurate. I mean, I think it's actually. So the thing is, you have to think about the motivation, right? Like, why are you telling your kids? Are you telling your kids because you want them to think, oh yeah, I was cool, like I tried this when I, or that I made a poor choice when I was younger, and you know, like when I used this, I did things that weren't safe and, you know, got me in a lot of trouble or something like that, to kind of like just put things in perspective for kids. So really to think about the motivation, but your motivation is good, right? To try to like help the kids understand that this was maybe not the best choice that they could have made back when they were younger or whatever. That I think that, again, as we've been talking about, opens the lines of communication so that if a kid does try to experiment or whatever, they know that, okay, my mom or dad said that they had a problem with drinking and once got in a car with somebody who had been drinking, or got in a car when they had been drinking, you know, started driving when they had been drinking themselves, and they got in an accident. Since I'm at a party and I drank something, I'm going to call my mom to pick me up or something like that. I don't think that just because a parent or a guardian used a substance or drank alcohol or whatever, or smoked cigarettes in the past, that that makes them unable to talk to their kids about drugs later.
The stigma of addiction has changed over time. In the 80s, the just say no culture pretty much made anyone who had done a drug seem like a really bad person. Now, most people know someone who has a substance use issue or has had a battle with addiction. How does that change the conversation with kids?
I always tell my kids that they're not bad, that they're good kids. They just sometimes make poor choices or poor decisions. And I feel like that's kind of applicable to this question, that I don't think you're a bad person if you use drugs or you had a problem with substances or alcohol in your past or even currently. It's a choice that you made that then sort of, because of what withdrawal means and dependence means, that then your body needs more of it. So that's why you continue to use. And I don't think that it's a choice, right? It started out as a choice, maybe. And then, you know, dependence is something also that, I mean, it's an illness. And so maybe like if they had avoided using that drug in the first place, then maybe they would have gone on a different pathway. But then they did try it, and then genetics and like, you know, like how dependence and, you know, withdrawal works like that determined the future course, sort of. But it doesn't, I totally doesn't make the person a bad person. And you're right, like a lot of us, I mean, because it's so prevalent, most people know somebody who's had issues with like alcohol or substances, and they're not bad people. They just need help.
I think that's part also something that kids, it's good for kids to learn that it's a disease. Yes, you made the choice at one point to try something, but like you said, it spirals and it becomes your life. And but those people aren't bad people. They just they need help, and that's
Yeah.
okay.
I mean,
Thanks.
and then the other thing is like, you know, we all know like sort of genetically, you could be at higher risk if like somebody in your family has a history of dependence. And so I feel like it's especially important for parents and guardians and for us as providers to let kids know, like, look, because you do have this history in your family, you might want to try to not like be especially careful to not use or drink because you might be at higher risk of having that become like a disease. I mean, I think the other thing that I wanted to make clear is that I know that I said it was a choice, and that makes it sound like people are choosing, you know, like when I said choice, I meant choices in like whether you that one turning point, you know, that crossroads. But after that, I mean, it could have just been a choice, and then you like the next time you don't make that choice. But sometimes depending on genetics and, you know, like the situation, the sort of like the community that you live in, the stressors going on, like all of those things might change it into like basically, you know, like a disease. Like genetics plays a role, like we were saying. And so you have to make sure that you aren't judging and that it's not like, you know, in that question, they're not bad people. It's just something that happened and something, a disease that arose, and so they need treatment and they need help. I guess the goal is to, at that sort of crossroads, help that child not go down that road.
In a family, is it possible, for example, for one child to have that addictive gene and their siblings to not?
So I'm actually not sure, but I do know that even in a family, even if there's one who seems like they would be the more likely one to like try something, I feel like both siblings would be equally at risk.
What kinds of tools and resources are available for parents who need a little help talking to their kids?
The SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, they have like a really good website, and they have this sort of like talk, they hear you thing going on right now, which is sort of like, you know, just say no, except more effective. And so they have this great thing on like why you should talk with your kids about alcohol and other drugs. They also have some videos that, you know, you can watch on like how to get that conversation started. So I think that that's really good. And then like the American Academy of Pediatrics, they have lots of resources. And obviously, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, they have like Facts for Families and things that parents can read too. But I really liked, when I was like looking online for resources, I really liked the SAMHSA one, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Like they had some really like on their it's the talk they hear you sort of campaign. I mean, it's basically saying like what we've been saying, which is I guess the sort of overarching theme of this is that the earlier you talk to your kids, the better, because you're developing that relationship and you're making them feel comfortable to ask you about things when they are like in difficult situations or confusing situations or, you know, unsafe situations.
Thank you to Dr. Liwei Hua, a child and adolescent psychiatrist and the Director of Psychiatry Education at Villa Maria Community Resources Behavioral Health Clinic in Anne Arundel County. If you have a substance use issue or an addiction you're ready to seek help for, or if you want help with your mental health, go to catholiccharities-md.org/behavioralhealth and click on the Behavioral Health Clinic link. We have more topics on behavioral and mental health this week. Be sure to check them out. Thank you for listening.